Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by SDR Pods. Learn how we can build you a fully equipped sales development team to execute on personalized multi-channel prospecting and book you more meetings at the link below.
You have a strong sales team closing tons of sales, a strong marketing team creating tons of opportunities, and a strong customer success team keeping all your customers happy, and each of these teams is growing. And then suddenly, you hit a ceiling. Communication is breaking down between the teams and things start falling through the cracks. So what's wrong and what can you do about it? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about RevOps, the missing link that will increase your revenue by 26%. He co-founded GoNimbly, the first revenue operations consultancy with the goal of allowing high-growth companies to increase the revenue of each of their customers through eliminating operational silos. Since 2013, GoNimbly has transformed the most innovative SaaS and PaaS businesses from the inside, exponentially improving the way they are able to deliver the go-to-market experience their customers demand. You can find him bring the message of Silo No More to podcasts, interviews, and other speaking engagements. And you can find him telling jokes through music, theater, stand-up, and writing on his third shift. Jason Reichel, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Wow, that was amazing. That was so professional. Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was a lot of energy. Now I feel like I have to amp it up.
Great.
So thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. Let's give our listeners a little bit of context on kind of how you got where you are today. Give us your background.
Sure. So I started my career in sort of the tech arts. So I ran some special effects teams. I went to school around Austin, Texas, and worked in special effects. And I always kind of was drawn to the business side of the arts. Is kind of what I found. I ended up working with a company called Rackspace in San Antonio very early on in my career, which was the largest server house in America. When I worked there, they had 1,000 people, and I got put onto a very special project with the founder of the company, Patrick Condon, working with Salesforce.com in what was called the redundant server cluster, which turned out to be the cloud. And so I worked on a special project to figure out how to keep servers up all of the time. And in that process, I kind of fell in love with the promise of SaaS because it was emerging, and it was this idea that you didn't have to have all this hardware to run these enterprise-grade applications. And I thought, oh, that's really cool. That's really going to change how companies do business, both being in the creative spaces before where everything was on hard drives and software was downloaded to, you know, working with Salesforce to build that redundant server cluster. I ultimately ended up working for a number of years in the Salesforce sales consulting space, primarily with a company called Blue Wolf, which was Salesforce's first SI. Had a very long history with them. Basically, the first year that Salesforce was founded, Blue Wolf CEO Eric Berridge and Mark Benioff were friends at Oracle, and so they came on to support the implementations of Salesforce. I ran the West Coast team for them, eventually moving my career into tech itself, becoming a VP of product at a couple unicorn companies, the largest of which was Tradeshift, which is a billion-dollar company that I helped lead to that place. Ultimately, while I was at Tradeshift, though, I had this realization that lots of companies had great product, but they didn't have a great revenue team. They didn't really understand their buyers appropriately. They didn't understand the art form behind sales, marketing, and customer success. They followed the same templates. And what I started to see is that product-led sales methodologies really were not doing as well as they used to in the SaaS space. And so I decided to start an organization that was both a software company, which is what GoNimbly is building as a piece of software, but also a consultancy where we've gone in and essentially worked with some of the largest, as you mentioned, SaaS companies, companies like Twilio, Zendesk, PagerDuty, in order to fix their silos and really break things down. So that's kind of where how I got here. I have a history both in the high growth space and a history in sales and revenue. So I understand both sides of the coin. And what I've come to terms with is that any great revenue team should be able to sell any piece of software, even if it's bad. Just the same way that, you know, an engineering team should be able to build an amazing piece of software, even if their revenue team is bad. And so I've been trying to teach businesses in Silicon Valley how to do that.
Awesome. So tell me, if I didn't know what revenue ops was, tell me, like, I'm five, what is ops? What is rev ops?
Okay. So revenue operations is the unification of siloed operations teams on your revenue side. So I think the first thing that we need to lay out is the difference between the two parts of a business. So I call the right side of the business, the product side of the business, being business operations, like your facilities and all, your CFO and all of these things, and your product and the people who build your product, and the program managers, product managers that you might have. All of those people should be on one wheel, because usually their North Star is one of two things. It's growth if you're an early stage company, or margin if you are a later stage company. And that's very clear on how to rally all of those people together. So when I start talking about operations, a lot of people get confused with business operations. Revenue operations is not business operations. So on the other side, you have that revenue team. And the revenue team is made up of sales, marketing, customer success. I call those people your go-to-market team. And then the people who support the functions under the hood is what I call the revenue operations team. So specifically in the past, they were probably called sales ops, marketing ops, customer success ops, Salesforce admins, all of that kind of supporting class language that usually rolled up to a sales or marketing VP. I think in the new world, they should roll up directly to a CRO or a CEO, and they're the yin to the yang of your go-to-market team. To use a theater thing, I think of sales, marketing, and customer success as the actors. They're in the front row shaking the hands of the babies and entertaining people. And the directors, the boom mic holders, all those people are the revenue operations people. So that's the analogy I like to use when someone is not familiar with the world of SaaS and how things work.
Awesome. So so when you've got these people in place, when you've got these behind the scenes people in the RevOps team, what are they improving? What is the kind of impact of having a RevOps team?
Right. So most organizations, once you get to about Series A and you're really trying to build out, they'll start building an operations team focused on revenue. So that might be, they might hire a Salesforce admin person or a marketing automation person to send out emails or whatever the case might be. That's the old way of the model. And just having a internal operations team focused on your revenue delivery methodologies will get you about 10% boost. So let's imagine I was a company that had zero operations in that space. My growth is going to be, if I set $1 million target, I hit it, I'm going to grow by $1 million. That's what's going to happen. If you put a legacy operations team in place, you'll grow by 10%. So if I put $1 million in there, I'll actually grow by $1,100,000. That's typically what you'll see. If you put a revenue operations team in place, which I'll describe the components of that, you'll see about 36% growth. And so that's where we get that 26% number that revenue operations really does service for you. And so the way that typically works in an organization is bringing people in and having them focused on what we call customer-based operational gaps in your buying experiences. So I just said a lot there that I think are important to give definitions to. So a buying experience is the way in which a customer buys. It can sometimes line up to how your organization might be actually organized. So a typical way of thinking about this is, if you have a buying experience where it's a long enterprise deal and you have to talk to 20 people in order to buy it, and that's the way the customer wants to buy the product, then that is a buying experience that, let's say, you sold to the government, that you would have for the government buying experience. And you could have your own sales team that's just focused on that, or you might not, but it's important to understand from the buying experience of the customer how they're experiencing buying your product. You might also have a very a velocity buying experience when someone never talks to anyone and they get a software demo or themselves by downloading a free trial or signing up for a free trial. And then ultimately that might be a buying experience you have to support. So most organizations actually have 3 to 10 buying experiences. And this is not what we call the customer journey, although it's tied to it, but the buying experience is solely from the perspective of the customer. So how do they want to engage? Go Nimbly is going to start publishing a lot more research. We're actually working on a research project with HubSpot and another revenue operations data company. But what we're finding in doing this research is that the buyers of high-tech software or any kind of enterprise B2B anything, they want to buy the products that they talk to. So as an example, someone who goes and starts a buying experience with Zendesk is 75% sure that they want to buy Zendesk. And this is really true across the board in B2C too. But what B2C has mastered that B2B hasn't is a personalized approach to each buying experience. So if you're on LinkedIn, the ad I see for me, not LinkedIn, sorry, Instagram, and the ad I see for my B2C product is tailored to my buying experience, how they know I like to buy things. We might get the same product, right? But ultimately, Sarah, you're going to get a different personalized approach if you're in a different buying experience. And now they're probably using segmentation and data to determine that, but it still feels very personal and people like that. The same thing for B2B. When you go to B2B, you don't really get treated in a personalized experience. And so what you're deciding is how much personal risk to take before you buy the product. And every interaction you have when you're buying B2B software or B2B anything that dings your confidence in that company will result in less LTV and less commitment from the customer. You still might make the win. So what we found is companies are like, well, we've won that one, so we're great. In reality, when we interview those customers or when we really look at their operational issues, that customer could have signed a bigger deal, done a much massive more pilot. They wanted to bring Zendesk to everywhere. They decided instead to focus Zendesk in their enterprise because during that experience, maybe it wasn't optimal for them. Right. And so they're like, I'm not really going to put my neck out and go to the other teams and try to rally everyone in the company. And so that's the buying experience and where we see people pick it up. And then on the other side of that, the personalization piece is just that. It's like you have to allow the customer to feel like a human, to feel like they have autonomy, to feel like they can trust you. And that's really done through eliminating silos in your internal structure. And so, you know, we're really big about eliminating silos, but the reason we do that is I don't really give a shit if your teams are dysfunctional internally. I don't care if it's hard to work with each other. I don't care about marketing sales alignment. What I actually care about is that when someone wants to buy a product from your company, is it a good experience or not for them? And then as an operator, I will make that experience better and better, which will have a domino effect of making your internal teams run more effectively. But that's not the goal. And a lot of times consultancies are brought in to make the internal workings of a company work better. But that's a fallacy because what will end up happening is you won't see better results. I find that if we focus on the customer, the client sees better results, the client accepts the changes much more rapidly, and you can actually transform that organization because results speak louder than kumbaya around a fire, around a fire.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about the infrastructure then that you need to put in place in order to eliminate these silos. Say I have a company, we have no sales ops. We've got everything else I'd need ahead of that moment. And I've got all the budget in the world to create this ideal revenue ops structure. Tell me how to do it.
Yeah, the revenue operation structure is pretty easy. So there's four skills of revenue operations. There's strategy, tools, enablement, and insights. Strategy is how are we setting the operational strategy? So just talk about strategy, how it usually is set in an organization around operations of a revenue team is the lowest form of operational strategy you have is called intuition. And this is all stuff that we've created at Codenimbly. It's called intuition-based operations. And that means a sales rep comes into the room and goes, Salesforce is not working for me. And as an operator, you go, yeah, I see the page layouts suck. I'll fix it. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just only based on people's intuition of what might be wrong with the problem. Yeah. The second phase is what we call experience-based operations. And this usually happens when you get to a B or C round and you hire some operations person from some company that you really admire. And that person comes in and says, well, this is how we did it at Stripe. And you go, okay, let's do it like we did it at, like you did it at Stripe. Now, typically what we start to see there is bigger projects. They become less task-based and more operationally project-based, but they're really just based on the experience of those operators on the team, right? And then ultimately the furthest part you can get to is customer gap-based, where you're doing analysis, which we have built methods for, doing analysis and figuring out where the gaps are in your customer experience. Now, here's the thing that I want to point out because some operators get pissed off at me when I say this. It doesn't mean that your intuition was wrong or that the experience was wrong, but you're prioritizing on your customer. So if you have a major transformational project that aligns down that and people knew you needed it and your experience told you and your customer gaps told you, well, then everybody wins. Right? But there is no way you can get to understanding what customer gaps you have if you're focused on the other two spaces, right? You'll never know if you have that for lack of a better word, silver bullet that's really going to transform your operations. So that's the first thing that you have to kind of get your mind around, which is it's not about, the operations team is not about servicing the internal operations of the business. They're about servicing the customer. And so that's the first kind of fundamental thing that if a CEO, CRO, COO was thinking about moving to a RevOps model, you kind of have to accept. If you don't accept that, what you're going to find is you're going to use a lot of words because they're buzzwords like revenue operations and we care about revenue impact, all these things that GoNimbly kind of helped coin, but you're not really going to see the results that you need because you don't have the right mindset. You don't have the right belief structure going into it. The second thing you need is you need people who are willing to be generalists. And that typically means that they come to you because every time you hire someone, they're going to come to you with a skill background that's necessary. So if you have Salesforce and you have a gap, like you mentioned, in your sales operations, there's nothing wrong with hiring someone that knows sales operations. The problem with that, especially when in the example that you gave where you're a fairly young company, let's say you're going to Series A and you just got $25 million, you don't know what you don't know. And if you hire someone that's deep in a specialty of sales ops and that's all they care about, everything is going to become a sales operations problem. Everything's going to become a Salesforce solution. Everything's going to become whatever. And that really takes away your ability to be flexible and probably what brought you success in the first place as a business. And so you need to hire these people in. And let's say I have someone that has a sales ops background. That's the tool they're most familiar in. They know Chorus and they know Drift a little bit and they know Salesforce a lot. I would then make them the subject matter expert in all sales ops. And so they would be setting the strategy, but I would have my other operation team members do the tool work, right? Because I believe that the best way to get your team to be well-rounded is a captain servant model of, okay, you're the expert in this. So you're going to help design the solutions. You're going to validate it, but we're going to have our other operations team members do it. And then vice versa, you are Mr. Sales Ops person going to be doing marketing operations work because I want you to be well-versed because I want you to know and have the right tool for the right problem. Right. And so that's the second thing that I would say that you need to do is you need to have a different, what I would call a professional development plan for your staff. And the third thing is you'd have to move your entire way of working to an action-based model. So an action-based model, and the thing that we usually go into companies and teach them is something like action meetings. And action meetings are meetings that are cross-functional with your operations team. And you're talking about the problems and working on them with what's the next action that we're going to take to drive this forward. So it's not a lot of update meetings. It's not a lot of consensus building. It's a lot of moving things forward, especially when you're a smaller Series A, Series B company. If you're enterprise, if you are Twilio as an example, you cannot have a bunch of generalists because the demand, the capacity demand is so specific in specific areas of the business. And obviously they didn't adapt this model from the very beginning. So it's very hard for them to move to it. Although even the largest companies are beginning to build a RevOps sub-function, which goal is to break down silos across all the different teams. But for those companies, I say, okay, well, what's important is that you have a generalist skill set. So you're 25%, just to give a stupid thing, but make it clear, your 25% strategy, your 25% tools, your 25% enablement, your 25% insights. You're not an all tool shop, meaning that you didn't hire just a bunch of technologists who don't understand strategy. If you have that, you're not going to be able to solve things with a generalist mindset. So again, it's not really about the people in that case. Once you grow to a certain point, it's about the makeup of your dynamic team. So those are the two ways that RevOps kind of manifest themselves, either in early stage or in later stage organizations.
Got it. Cool. Let's focus on the early stage for now. I think the majority of our listeners are kind of in that stage. At least their rev ops would be in that stage if they're kind of a larger company in, some other field. So let's say early stage. And let's say they bring on this team that you've talked about, this kind of diverse team with these a myriad of skills. How do they get to that 26% revenue increase?
Sure. So there's a methodology we use that is feasible for customers of non-GoNimbly to build out. We are building software, so it's easier for everyone to use it. But it's called 3VC, and it's sort of the first revenue operation KPI metric system that will help you identify the gaps in your customer journey. So there are two ways that gaps show up. There's reactive gaps, meaning that they already exist in your processes with the customer, and there's proactive gaps. So we'll talk about those. Reactive gaps you find through this 3VC process. And that's, just to be clear what 3VC is, it's volume, value, velocity, and conversion. and you can pull this from your opportunity data in Salesforce. We typically, you should be pulling it from your entire customer base, but most people don't have attribution done in that scale. So you can get a good idea of your buying experience by just pulling your different sales pipelines. And what you do is you look at that data and you try to find two things. You trend against yourself. So you find the red areas in all of those different places. So as an example, if my volume drops between stage one and stage two, that's a sign that there's a marketing operations problem about high quality leads being handed off to the SDR team or to the sales team, right? You will see this in the data. And then that will give you the basis for, if we correct this and we can fix the volume issue here, we are going to be delivering a better experience to our customer and we're going to be having more wins, right? So that's a very simplistic example. So over time, you have this for each of the buying journeys and you keep running this data on a monthly basis and it will tell you where to spot something. But let's say you have a low conversion issue and stage two, let's pretend this example is going from demo to proposal. That's this company's imaginary simplified process. You may not know why you have a conversion issue. So then what you need to do is do what we call a proactive durability test. And that is where you would go out and either sit with your reps and do a very controlled experiment of, here are the five questions I'm going to ask each of my reps. It's not about finding individual rep performance. Actually, the big goal about revenue operations is to not be sales training. You're not trying to train individual sales reps. You're trying to manage and own a scalable process. So people ask all the time, where does sales coaching sit? I say in sales, because that's about coaching individuals, but enablement of processes and systems and how we go to market sits in revenue operations, right? So they'll sit with them and maybe go through that. Maybe they'll go out and find out, do a durability test where they go and try to buy five competitors' products and see if they have the same issues in that stage, right? Because maybe it's about the buying experience is that this buying experience, the customers are very shell-shocked by price and they're going to drop out as soon as the demo goes. And if you can find that you are of normal, if you are of normal conversion in that area, even if you're down and it's a lower number for you, maybe there's nothing you can do about it. So here's the big thing about that is a lot of operators go, if we could just raise our conversion point by 2%, we would X at millions of dollars. And that's how, you know, capacity is set and all these other kinds of strange things, but it's not real because how do you know that you can? Right. And how there's two ways to know. One is your past performance says you can, or two, and what GoNimbly does is we actually collect all of the data from our customers and we create industry benchmarks. Yeah. Right. And so we know that in this meta layer between stage two and stage three, if you have a conversion rate of 25%, it's wrong because you should have a conversion rate of 60%. Right. And so that's the benefit of what we bring to our customers. And ultimately, when we build our piece of software, what we want to bring to revenue operations as a practice, right? Well, because it's really about setting those industry benchmarks and measuring yourself. It's like a game of golf. How well are you doing? And then how well should you be doing are two different pieces of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So to kind of sum it all up, of course, the existence of revenue operations is to encompass the kind of enablement, the strategy of the sales, the marketing, and the customer success. It's not about individually solving issues within each of those teams because that's actually not what's important. It's important from the customer side. So as the customer moves through the journey from coming in through marketing, moving through sales, ending up at customer success, where are the gaps there? And that's what you focus on first with revenue ops. And in turn, it'll trickle down and it'll improve life for everyone on those teams as they see an increase in you know, revenue ops, whatever, opportunities. But the focus has got to be from that customer side. And then from there, you look at the data. So it's about not being kind of anecdotal in what you're looking to solve, but actually looking at where the bottlenecks are in this entire process. When you find that, then that's where you go in and you focus.
Absolutely. That's why the fourth thing is not data, but insights. The revenue operations team is responsible for delivering insights into the process and how to improve that process. So if you think about it as a wheel, you know, you have your strategy. So you have your overall strategy, your go-to-market strategy, maybe your process strategy, you have the tools that get enabled, then you enable the team at scale. And then you look at those insights, and then that will drive more strategy, which will drive more tool behavior, which will drive so on and so forth. So that's the cycle of how you actually get to the 26%. It's an iterative cycle. One thing I'll mention just at this point is it's very critical that people abandon KPIs, which we call vanity metric KPIs, which have nothing to do with anything except reinforcing your silos. So one common one, which is controversial to say, but it is true that in most organizations, it is garbage, is MQL to SQL handoff, right? Or scoring. It's all garbage because you know it's garbage because if the head of sales goes to the head of marketing and goes, I need more leads for my sales team, the head of marketing goes, okay, I can lower the score threshold. Well, if that was real, if the score threshold was real, the marketer would go, oh shit, that's a real problem that we need to come up with because our score is so real, I'm not going to flood you with things that are not going to actually turn into revenue. But when push comes to shove, what that marketer was looking for is a number to say, well, we met our quota, we gave them 100 leads this month, or we gave them 1,000 leads this month, whatever it might be. And so there's a lot of vanity protective KPIs in the world of SaaS and B2B that are kind of just complete garbage, and CEOs really shouldn't rely on them because they'll just be used to justify failure. Nobody talks about KPIs like SQL to marketing handoffs or lead handoff when you hit your targets, if you realize that, right? Instead, what they talk about is when you don't hit your targets. Well, I still hit my number, so this is a problem in sales. Oh, it's an SDR function. We hired too many SDRs who didn't understand the value early on. It all, or our customer success team is churning people, so we didn't hit our number because we didn't hit our overall growth number. All of these things become sort of defense mechanisms of the silos. And so you really need to pay attention to that. There are such things as what we call momentum-based KPIs, which are directly tied to revenue, right? Because if you have a long sales cycle, like 8 months, you're not going to be able to see revenue impact very quickly. So you need to figure out, okay, for every demo we actually do with a customer, we close 9 out of 10 of those. So the more demos we do, the better. If you can make that hard correlation between those two things, then that is an actual momentum-based KPI. And so then you can drive more tactical-based decisions like, okay, as a marketer, we need to get people to demo, because if we don't get people to demo, then we don't get to revenue. And then you can set more things. But I'm a big proponent that everyone on the revenue team, including RevOps, carries a real revenue impact number. And I think the whole team should be motivated by the North Star metric of increasing revenue.
Mm-hmm. So do you think it should be kind of built into people's comp, like everyone's in that 100%. Whole team?
Everyone on the revenue team should have a bonus or commission structure, in my opinion. And you should be, paying a lot less for them so that it drives performance. I think that across the board, that whole function should have their salaries cut to 60 to 70% based on performance and the rest based on hitting your number.
Interesting. Okay, so we talked about if you had kind of unlimited budget to build out this dream RevOps structure. Let's scale it back. Let's imagine that I don't have unlimited budget, but I want to make the first move. I want to take the first step towards building this out. What's the first thing that I should do?
Okay, well, the first thing this is more of me putting on a product manager hat. The first thing you need to understand is, what is your product? If your product requires education, then the first operational hire that you should hire is someone with a marketing ops background who understands personification, understands marketing. And I'm not talking about a marketer. I'm talking about someone who understands how to deliver marketing programs appropriately, right? Because you probably already have a marketer in this scenario. And what's going to be really important is the first processes you're going to want to scale up are marketing processes. So let's pretend you only have budget. You only have $120,000. You can only hire one person. So that's where I would tell you to invest your money. But when you're interviewing those people, talk to them about, can you create urgency, right? Do you know how to create rapport? Like, what are the steps for creating rapport with someone? Because when you're especially that small, it is insane to think that you can keep that marketing ops person always busy with just marketing ops work. And so you need to know that they have at least the baseline understanding of sales. And my favorite thing to do is don't trick them. Like, tell them, hey, we really need a marketing ops person because delivering this content into the marketplace when we are an innovative product that people don't understand is critical. We need you to be experienced or aware of sales things like urgency, rapport building. I'm going to ask that in your interview. So if you don't know, go study it up. right? Because I need to see that you can demonstrate a working knowledge of this. I don't care if you haven't had the experience, because you need to understand that when you move into this world, you're going to have to do a lot of training, because this is not the world at which these people have come to. They've come to the world of Marketo champions. They've come from a world of deep, deep specialization in one specific area. And so it's very important in the interview cycle that you level the playing field by saying, we are a generalist company. We believe in generalism. We're hiring you because we have a specific need for this reason, but we need to know that we want you to expand. Most people are going to go, great, because I've been so frustrated that my marketing stuff fails all the time because it's not aligned to sales, right? That's the reality of operators want to do good shit. So like they are very excited about expanding their horizons most of the time. If you are a company who is a disruptor, you have a piece of technology that is either cheaper or better, but it's easy to understand the technology, then you're going to want a sales operations person, because you're going to scale up your sales side as fast as possible. Customer success operations is always something you can wait for until you have probably around $500,000 to $1 million ARR. And then I would tell you probably hire someone in that operations, because as soon as you do that, upsell and cross-sell is going to be your fastest way to growth. And so you need to operationalize that part of the business. Churn is, to me, a business metric. Churn is about that wheel of, is our product good? Do people like it? So on and so on, right? But upsell, cross-sell is a CS revenue number that I care a lot about. And I would say that a good SaaS company is driving 20 to 30% of their growth off of upsells and cross-sells. And if they're not doing that, then they're just abandoning a huge amount of revenue.
Got it.
In COVID times, it's turned out to be something like 80 to 90% of their revenue is tied directly to upsells and cross-sells.
Yeah, makes sense.
So.
Okay, great. So we've talked about kind of the dream team if you've got all the money. We've talked about what you should do right off the bat if you're thinking about starting RevOps, depending on the type of company that you're in. Is there anything that you think I'm missing in terms of, let's say, companies looking to build this out for the first time?
No, I think the only thing that I would go back to is your leadership team and your leadership team's understanding. This is very hard for people who are founded by tech engineers to understand, because they think that the product can sell itself. Your product is selling itself, but what you're trying to do is capture more faster. So why would you want to capture $2 when you could capture $4? And as soon as I can make that connection for the entrepreneur leadership team who might be technical in nature, they understand what we're talking about is maximizing. We're not talking about discrediting the product. We're talking about maximizing the potential of the product. And a lot of times that's the way you can get those people, especially if let's say you are a COO who's listening to this and you work in an organization where it's very tech driven and you can't seem to get any traction to focus on the revenue side of the business. Right. Well, we don't need a sales team. We don't need a marketing team. We don't we can use consultancy, but we need it to be done. It's not an ongoing engagement. It's like there's a lot of resistance to that. Right. And so you really need to show them that what it's about is not ROI, but instead about maximizing the value. So that's one thing I would give to people, especially those who are in environments where maybe they're partnered with a tech entrepreneur. And when you're early stage.
Got it. Well, this has been incredibly informative. I didn't know a whole lot about RevOps. And so it's actually been, amazing for me to learn about it. And I'm sure so many of our listeners as well. We've got some great pointers here on where to go, regardless of the type of company you are, regardless of the kind of stage that you're in, and some really clear examples of why this is such a good idea and how it actually works in practice. If people want to learn more from you, if they want to learn more about Go Nimbly, where can they do that?
GoNimbly.com. We have a wonderful blog that we actually purposefully try to keep out our sales pitches from, so we don't message you or anything, but it's all about revenue operations and how to bring it to organizations at different levels of scale. So I suggest you check that out. And then you can follow me on LinkedIn. I do video posts and I answer questions for people. I'm really engaged in that platform and really believe that, like, here's what I actually think, just to end this. This is not a fad. It's not anything. It is the transformation from traditional manufacturing to lean manufacturing. It is the transition from waterfall development to agile development. If you don't change how your organization operates in the next 2 years, you will be at a differential to your competitors for the next 20 years. And so it's very important that you take this seriously. I don't care what the fuck you call it. Like, I don't care if you use revenue operations. When we first started, we called it unified business operations. Like, it doesn't matter what you call it. It's a mindset you should adopt, because your competitors are some of the biggest companies in the world, including very staple brands like Coca-Cola, Dell Computers, are making this change, right? Mm-hmm. It's just easier to make this change when you're a young SaaS technology startup than it is when you are a behemoth, but it is happening on the behemoth side. So know that all of your competitors are going to get more agile with the way they go to market because of this.
There you go, guys.
Do it.
What better reason to move forward with this than that? And we'll be sure to include that Go Nimbly blog in the show notes so that you guys can check out the rest, all the rest of the information that those guys are sharing on revenue operations. Yeah, thank you so much, Jason, for being a guest on the episode. Really wonderful to have you.
Thank you, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you guys so much for watching another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. We'll catch you next time.